Hello and welcome to the Unbundled Attorney Mastermind Podcast. My name is Dave Ahrens and I'm the co-founder and CEO of Unbundled Attorney. In this podcast, we interview many of our provider attorneys, as well as some of the leading experts in the industry to isolate the best practices for building internet-generated leads and how to ethically and effectively offer unbundled legal services and other more affordable options in your practice. For more information about our services, visit www.unbundledattorney.com. All right, as always, very excited for today's episode. We're interviewing Bill Fix, one of our provider attorneys out of Knoxville, Tennessee. And Bill is one of many attorneys, actually, that had a life before law, you know, essentially had a profession and was in the marketplace and did become a lawyer straight out of law school. And as a result, got a lot of different experiences through college and some other professions that he's now brought forth or parlayed into his law practice, such as selling books door-to-door for Southwestern Company, a sales training company where he would spend a couple summers selling books door-to-door, and a lot of things that he learned in that as far as relating to people, not prejudging, and a lot of other sales and mindset strategies that, you know, we talk a lot about in this episode that I think is an overarching perspective and is unique and consistent with all of the providers in our network that convert really high. They've got great relationship skills, great communication. They relate well. They empathize with people's situations. So talk a lot about that. He's also began his practice working from home. He didn't have an office for a long time, only until recently. So he talks about mobile lawyering and how he would create places that he could meet the clients, whether it be Panera Bread or sometimes even in his house, which he's happy to be transitioning now to having his own office. And then we also talk finally about estate leads and the success he's had with fielding estate leads, how it's a little different from family law, and how he approaches those calls and some strategies that he's developed in order to convert those effectively too. So this is a great interview. Can't wait to get right into it with Bill Fix, one of our provider attorneys out of Knoxville, Tennessee. All right, Bill, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Dave.
Yeah, really happy to have you on here today and looking forward to our chat. You've made quite a number of transitions in the months and time that we've been working together. So really looking forward to diving in and exploring how you've been able to do them. So thanks for taking the time to join us today.
You bet.
Yeah, so maybe as a first step here, maybe you can share a little bit about your background, how you got your start in the practice, and your the focus of your practice nowadays, and a little bit about you.
Okay. Well, for me, I'm one of those lawyers that did not go to law school straight out of college. I was a political science major, and I'd had folks say, why don't you go to law school? Why don't you consider it? And at the time, I thought, yeah, the last thing I want to do is spend another 3 years in school. I'm ready to get out and into the workforce and do something. And so, anyway, when I graduated college in 2001 with a political science degree and having worked on some campaigns and stuff in 2000, when I got out, it really wasn't the best time to get some political jobs, some political opportunities. And so I couldn't really find what I was looking for. I wound up branching out a little bit and took a position with Edward Jones as an investment rep. Even though I didn't have a business background, had not studied business in college, what helped me get that was I'd had 2 years in summer, or 2 summers in college, where I had sold books door to door, working 80 hours a week, and that really fit in with the Edward Jones style of getting out and building a business. But for me, the way it worked out is while I was studying for the Series 7 test, was when 9/11 hit, and even though I passed the test, I just didn't have any confidence and I knew what I was doing. I'm here, 21, 22 years old, thinking, why are people 2 and 3 times my age going to trust what I tell them about retirement planning, especially with such the volatile market that we had at the time? And anyway, I just preface this with all that because, I think today, working as an attorney, especially as a solo practitioner, you know, you've got to know the law and you've got to know what you're doing. But if you don't know how to sell yourself and how to relate to people, it's really difficult to build a business. And so some of those opportunities that I had in college and after college helped me just understand how to relate to people. While I never really did work as an investment representative, I think some of the things I did learn through that training has helped me in sitting down with folks and looking at their plans for the future. The biggest part of my practice is estate planning. And while I'm not licensed to sell securities or anything like that, it's something that you try to look at the big picture with a client and help them look at, you know, what they're doing while they're alive here, and trying to make plans for the future and, you know, planning for their families and so on, as well as making plans for once they pass away and how they want things to shape out.
Right.
So anyway, after my failed time with Edward Jones, or my resignation, however you want to look at it.
Hey, Bill, can I ask you about something actually before we move on from there?
Sure.
You mentioned that you used to sell books door to door. Did you do that for Southwestern?
I did, yes.
Okay, yeah. I had a good friend of mine that sold books door to door, and he tells me about it all the time as far as, you know, how great of an experience it was for him actually. Can you talk a little bit about what that was like and what you took away from that experience?
Well, yeah. It's, you know, I don't know what that company's like today, because nowadays the internet and you know, technology has really taken over. For me, it was the summers of 98 and 99. But what they do, the company recruits college students, and they get them into their sales training program, I guess is what they call it. But you go to another state for the whole summer, and you're selling books door to door, educational books. It helps kids generally with their day-to-day homework. It's not encyclopedias. I don't even know if encyclopedias are still a thing nowadays. But these are books that just, you know, study guides for the older kids. There were some, you know, other things geared towards younger kids, you know, learning to read and learning, you know, basic math principles and things like that in preschool and elementary school. But yeah, I mean, when you're out working, well, we started first knock on your first door was going to be before 7:59 a.m.
Right.
And the last house we left was going to be at past 9:30 at night, 6 days a week. So that's over 80 hours a week. That's all you're doing. You're 100% devoted to doing that. And I certainly was not the best salesman in the world. But the bottom line is, if you're out there doing what you're supposed to do, knocking on, you know, 100 doors a day, you're going to get three or four customers at least in the day, and you're going to wind up having a decent summer. And so that's kind of how it worked out for me. It wasn't really my ideal thing that I wanted to do for the summer, but it was a good opportunity, and I saw that it was an opportunity for me to learn how to really work hard. When I looked at it my freshman and sophomore years of college, you know, for me, I'd always succeeded just based on, you know, being able to coast, really. School always came easy to me. I didn't have to work hard to make good grades. But I saw that as something, hey, you know, if I want to make, you know, $8,000-$10,000 this summer, I can do it doing this, but it's going to force me to work hard and really see what that's like.
Yeah, and you know, for a lot of people that haven't sold books door to door, I mean, you're dealing with, you mentioned 100 doors a day, you might get two or three customers. So that means you're getting the door either slammed in your face, or you're getting no's 97 out of 100 times. And so, can you talk about, you know, again, I'm looking at it through the frame of a good friend of mine who did this, some of the self-talk and whether some of the principles you had to learn to get through that rejection and keep your confidence high throughout the day and day after day after day, like you said, 80 hours a week, 7 to 9 p.m., and maybe how that maybe even play out to how you run your practice, or, and if there's any parallels between what you learned then and how you do that now.
Oh, sure. I mean, sometimes people just don't understand what you're doing. You know, why is this college kid with out-of-state plates running around my neighborhood? You know, but, you know,
literally
you just say,
running,
hey, look,
right?
well, I was driving. I was in a rural part of North Carolina in 98. but, you know, me being from the South, I grew up in Kentucky and Tennessee. I finished college in Missouri. You know, I haven't been all over the country, but it does seem like the South is a place where folks tend to be a little nicer. It's a little more laid back. I can count on probably, you know, one, maybe two hands at the most, the number of people that were totally rude and slammed the door in my face, you know, over 3 months that summer. You know, as long as you're out there, you know, I guess not being too creepy. If you're out there doing what you're supposed to do and you got a good attitude, you know, folks are going to be nice. They might not buy what you're selling. They may not want to spend any time with you. But basically, they said, if you show your books to 30 people a day, you'll do all right. Now, some of those is just a quick, you know, hey, just so you know what I'm doing, let me show you what I'm doing. And you're just showing it to them at the door for 2 minutes. And they'll say, okay, well, no, that's nice, you know, but, you know, it's not really what we need or not what we're looking for. That's fine. That's cool. And go on about your business. Other people look at it and say, wow, I can see how that's helpful. I remember there was one girl, a high school girl, that looked at it, and she said, you know, that's really going to be helpful to me. And she, you know, talked it over with her folks. And I think she was the one who paid at least for at least half of them. And, you know, she saw the value in it, and just knowing that you can be out there and make a difference in somebody's educational career, or their educational outlook, maybe it helped them, you know, make some better grades and you know, go on to better things after high school. You know, you're making a difference in somebody's life. So, I mean, just finding out how to relate to people, how to have fun. You mentioned a minute ago, self-talk. I mean, yeah. Some of the other guys that I worked with were even more energetic and fired up about it than I was. And sometimes you'd look at these people and go, "Man, some of these guys are a little crazy. They're a little out there for me." you know, just running around. This is a great day. It's a great day.
Best day ever. Best day ever. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I will admit, I was never quite that over the top with it. But one of the things that does still stick with me is, you know, we were coached that, you know, bad things are going to happen to you. You're going to run into problems. And that's the biggest takeaway from this, I think, was that you really learned how to solve problems. You know, for me, I was out in a rural county in North Carolina, and there was no way I was going to be able to do that without a vehicle. You know, for and there are some students that would go do this and they didn't have their own car, and so they would be in a more you know, more urban area where they could do it walking and still get by. But there was one day that you know, my car broke down. A ball joint broke when I was backing out of somebody's driveway, and so, you know, here I am. I've got to get a tow truck. I've got to get my car out of this person's driveway. And then my car was in the shop for a couple of days getting worked on. And, you know, regardless of those issues, I know that I still have to get my 30 demos in for the day. And to get 30 demos, that means I've got to talk to 70 people, which probably means I've got to, you know, knock on 100 doors. And I still got to get my numbers regardless of getting my car into a shop and making arrangements there. And this being 1998, I didn't have a cell phone on me. And so the world's a little bit different today. But still, you know, at the end of the day, I got my car in and I just worked the neighborhood around where the auto shop was. I don't think I made a sale that day, but at the end of the day, I felt great just because I didn't let that problem stop me from doing what I was supposed to do that day. And so one of the things that I remember him saying was, regardless of any problem you run into, you know, it may be something that, you know, totally sucks, but come up with three good things that you can think of about that problem. That sounds crazy to say, but when you sit there and you think, okay, hey, well, now I'm going to get a little more exercise because I'm out here walking or jogging, you know, trying to knock on doors to get my work done. If you spend 5 minutes, you'll come up with three positive things out of a negative experience, you know, and it helps you build toward, you know, the next day or the next call or the next potential client that you're running into.
Yeah. And can you, and it, man, there's so many things I could, different direction could take that, but can you draw some parallels from those years and those lessons and how that informs the way you run your practice nowadays?
Sure. I mean, it's, you know, well, I would say when the first few leads I got from Unbundled Attorney, you know, I came away with the impression that, you know, some of these folks just don't have enough money to hire an attorney. That's why they're looking up a service to try to find unbundled services. And, you know, sometimes it may be more difficult to pitch, you know, legal services to somebody that doesn't, you know, they can't really afford them. And it's, you know, it's kind of like in the movie Glengarry Glen Ross. You know, these are bad leads. These are bad leads. We can't sell any of these leads. Well, that's not the case. You know, there's going to be good leads. There's going to be bad leads. You're going to get some of both. It's just finding the right hook or the right way to connect with that person and finding a way to work with them. Yeah, sometimes people just absolutely have no money, and there's not a whole lot you can do unless you want to take them pro bono or really cut your rate. But, you know, selling books in Pamlico County in North Carolina, you know, there were a lot of parts out there in the county where, you know, there'd be a nice house, and then next door might be a rundown trailer. And you'd go up to that trailer thinking, I might be wasting my time here. But knock on the door, and it's a nice family, and they'd pay in cash up front. You know, you can't really prejudge things accurately 100% of the time. And sometimes folks will surprise you. And, you know, the nice house that was next door, they may have a big mortgage and not be able to afford anything else. So it's just, you got to give everybody a chance and find a way, you know, find whatever way that you can to relate to them. And, you know, if they believe in you and they believe what you're, you know, believe your story, they trust in you that you can follow through, then, you know, the hard part's already done.
Yeah. And, you know, Bill, you, given what you just said, you are not going to believe what I'm about to say, but there are some lawyers that look at the lead and based on what it says in the lead, don't call it.
Yeah.
So can you talk about that and maybe... It's a great analogy when we think about selling books. You look at the house and you go, it's run down. There's no way they're going to be able to afford, you know, whatever the cost of the books, $1,000 or whatever it is. And then sure enough, you know, you're surprised that, you know, someone pays cash or you find a way to look at it. So, you know, how do you, you know, do you not look at the lead description? Do you look at it briefly, but then you call them anyway and you try to come objectively? Like, how do you overcome when someone says in the lead, well, I don't have any money or I'm on fixed income or something like that?
And I will admit, I'm probably one of those that I look at the description and think, oh man, this one ain't going to be too great. But yeah, there are still times I find myself being surprised. I mean, there was one guy that I talked to a few months ago that, you know, when he first called me, it took me a while to understand really what he was getting at, because I don't practice in criminal defense. My practice areas now are estate planning, probate, and family law. And there might be an occasional thing where I do, you know, a business organization or something else. But it's really estate planning and family law. Those are my two main buckets that I work in. And, you know, this client was talking about, you know, getting a DUI and having some ongoing issues as a result of that. And I was telling him, man, I don't practice in criminal defense. You need to get a DUI attorney. But once I understood that as a result of the DUI, a separate issue was that he, you know, DCS had stepped in and didn't allow him to have interaction with his children temporarily. And, okay, well, that's something I can try to work with you on. And I met with him, and he tells me that he's not working, his wife is not working, and, you know, the main reason that they're both not working is that they have a special needs son that eats up, you know, it requires both of them to take care of him, you know, all day. Now, you know, the attorney that wants to make sure that all the work you do is getting is getting compensated accordingly, you think, well, how's this guy going to afford anything? but you know, one way or another, he came through with cash in hand, and we're making progress on his case and doing everything that the court has required him to do in order to get you know, to get back in, into the house and do what he needs to do and work with his kids again. So that's certainly an example that immediately comes to mind as somebody that, you know, if you judge a book by its cover, you know, I wouldn't have been working with him today if I'd stuck with my original gut feeling on that. But you know, he's a nice guy, and he made some mistakes, and he'll admit that. But you know, he's trying to do what he's supposed to do now.
Yeah, and so maybe that's a good point to take a look at some of those options, because you know, attorneys might go, okay, great, you know, there's an example, but you know, you're obviously finding really flexible and creative ways to work with folks and fit your services into their budget. And that's what a lot of, you know, this is about and so forth. So can you talk a little bit about those types of options that you've offered and developed, you know, over the, you know, year and time that we've worked together and even before?
Sure.
To work with
Sure.
people that, you know, maybe don't have, you know, $5K right now to plop down, but you still have Right. ways in which you can get paid well and still serve them.
Yeah. I mean, for me, a lot of what I do is just basically how I was trained when I was working at a law firm my last year of law school. I went to law school in San Antonio, Texas, at St. Mary's University, and I worked at a small firm there. My boss was Javier Oliva, and he had been in practice, I think, 20 years. There were, you know, you hear about folks charging, you know, up to $5,000 on divorces and more as retainers. I never saw him charge anything like that. You know, a lot of times his retainers would have been, you know, something that the average person could afford. And I remember him telling me, hey, I try to price my services where the average person, you know, can work with us on that. So that, you know, I've just carried that through to my practice because that's how I learned. And, you know, at this point, that's certainly what I'm comfortable doing. And if somebody, you know, doesn't have that up front and they need to, you know, make payments over time, I tell them, hey, I'm happy to work with you. And I'll borrow from a financial strategist that I partner with on some things. As long as you're nice, I'll work with you. You know, the last thing any attorney wants is, especially on a family law case, is that, you know, that client that's calling them up every day and complaining and asking, what are you doing on my case? And you know, basically, you know, getting an earful from an agitated client who really is just emotional about their case. If you set the tone up front that as long as you're nice, you know, I'll be happy to work with you. You know, I'm certainly not as detailed as I listened to the podcast from a week or two ago. I don't remember her name, but the firm in Oklahoma, and they're Ooh. Really detailed about the payment plans that they set up and so on. And you know, that's something that I'm going to be borrowing and trying to implement into a more organized system in my practice. But you know, it's something where, you know, if somebody can do half down, or if they can do at least a chunk, and go on a you know, pay as you go on a monthly basis, I'm happy to work with them. You know, I think at this point there's been one person that I went to a hearing for, and they weren't paid in full, and you know, here we are a year and a half later, and I never saw the second half of it. So occasionally, you know, it comes back to bite you, but you know, just knowing that you can go out there and do a good job for somebody, try to help somebody out in a bind. You know, if 1% of it doesn't pan out, you know, that's your way look at it. That's, you know, that's your good deed. You know, that you can put in or count that as pro bono hours or write it off on your taxes or something. You know, just let it go.
Yeah, and do you find there's a couple of things there I need to, but do you mm-hmm. find that it is more like a 1% where you can just kind of write off that option? Do you find most people, when you're offering these options, and maybe we can get a little bit more into specifics of, you know, how you structure and so forth, but that it's an anomaly for them to not come through on you know, paying you for your time?
Yeah, I mean, there's you know, I remember the going back to a podcast from a week or two ago. You know, they had basically said, you know, the initial consultation would be a certain amount, but they, you know, they would count that in with the retainer or whatever. I typically don't even do that. You know, I'll consider the consultation being for free, and sometimes that means when I set an appointment, they don't show up. You know, they didn't have anything invested in it, and so sometimes I get set up on appointments. And I'm talking with Graham the other day. He gave me some good tips on how to try to overcome that, which I'm going to be implementing, which is basically, hey, let me get your credit card number, and believe it or not, I've had a few folks that didn't show up for me when we scheduled a time, and you know, that's time that I could have spent, you know, with another client or working with another client, and you know, it basically charge a, you know, a $50 no-show fee. And you know, at least if the client thinks that that's or the potential client thinks that's a possibility, they're definitely going to be there, or at least call to reschedule if they're not going to make it. But yeah, for me, it's only been one or two people that I've put on a payment plan, and we get to the end of the case, and they don't want to come through with the rest of the money. There's been a few more though that I've you know, sat down with. We had our initial consultation. They signed a contract, and they didn't have any money, you know, the first day, and I never saw them again. And so, I mean, there I don't feel that bad if they, you know, if they never paid, so I never did any work for them. You know, I'll try to reach out and say, hey, you know, if you want to get this going, we need to do something here. But yeah, sometimes, you know, for whatever reason, you can't get a hold of folks again. But yeah, most people will show up. Most people will either pay up front or put something down, and understand that it's a process, and that as you work through the process, they can see the light at the end of the tunnel. And if they're making payments along the way, or it's a second payment that you know, finishes it out, whatever it is, most folks will, you know, will keep up their end of the bargain as long as I'm keeping up mine.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't want to jump around too much here, but I want to go back to the gentleman that you were trained under in the law school in San Antonio, Javier. What was his last name, and what was the spelling of his last name?
Oliva, O-L-I-V-A.
Yeah, you know, so many attorneys come out of law school, and I don't know if it's, you know, what's going on in the most recent days, and we've had some lawyers that, you know, are brand new, you know, practitioners and come right, you know, straight to working with us and go forward. But most of the lawyers that we hear, you know, what they're trained in law school is through traditional full representation and, you know, big retainer up front and so forth. And so it's unusual to me that coming out of law school, you had the philosophy of already offering, you know, options that could fit into the average, you know, lower middle income family's budget. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, some of the things that you know, your experience with Javier especially, and
sure,
and you know, how that informed in addition to working with people on that budget, or what that experience was like?
Yeah. I mean, his practice was a little bit different from mine today. He was a general practitioner, so he did, you know, wills and estate planning, probate, family law, criminal defense, personal injury, and some business type interests. And he had, you know, a few business clients who, you know, pretty much had him on retainer. Sometimes, you know, there was, you know, some months there was a lot to do with one of those, other months there wasn't. And, you know, I'm not sure what, you know, how everything really worked out for him as far as, you know, payments go. But, you know, if it may be something that he had some, you know, he may have had some clients that were, you know, that basically covered all of his expenses. And so that gave him the flexibility to, you know, to be more flexible or to be more affordable for other people. You know, he was also teaching some classes at UTSA, University of Texas, San Antonio. And I mean, he had a lot of other interests and community activities going on. So I think it's just the idea of being, you know, community minded. And you know, certainly there are attorneys out there who are working for the buck, and that's all that they've got going on. But I think there's a lot more that we don't or the general public doesn't really hear about, that are interested in doing whatever they can to help their clients and to give back in whatever ways they can, whether it's pro bono or just, you know, setting their fees at a reasonable amount that regular folks can work with.
Yeah, I really like that idea of being community-minded. You know, we just had an interview with Richard Shannon, who's been practicing for over 50 years on the most, you know, the last podcast episode, and he talked about, you know, the importance of understanding being an attorney and counselor of law. And he, you know, thought of himself as a healer. You know, there was a quote he made, I think it was Warren Berger. Let me see if I can find my notes, but I think the quote was something like, it's Brian. Our profession is about healing human conflict, you know, by Warren Berger. And so he thought of himself as a healer. And so in a very similar vein, you know, we're talking about you're being community minded and thinking about how you can serve your community, obviously make a living, make financial, you know, do well financially, but also serve those in your community and how you could instantly start thinking about how that would change your perspective on the way you serve each person in front of you.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah, I just found that to be really...
And I'll say another thing that's kind of helped my practice is partnering with a few local businesses that, you know, that kind of makes sense. You know, the insurance agent that I use, we swap referrals, and I also work with a financial strategist. He'll and there have been times that I've pulled him in on a consultation where it's, you know, an estate planning consultation, but he's there to kind of also give some guidance on retirement planning. But the insurance agent specifically that I partner with here in Knoxville, they are the most community-minded insurance agency I've ever seen. I mean, they do a number of things with the Children's Hospital here, with you know, special needs folks. They'll do fundraisers for them. They offer they'll host a Christmas party for their clients every year, and a summer picnic. I mean, I've just never heard of an insurance agency doing stuff like that, but it makes a big difference to the clients and to the community. It gives them a lot of goodwill and name recognition in the community, and it certainly makes me feel better about, you know, keeping my business with them and referring them to other people, you know, because they're doing so much good that they don't have to do.
Just having that perspective, you can see that, you know, just having those events, you know, people feel really great, get to connect with everyone, keep those relationships about, because, you know, I don't remember the last time I saw my insurance agent or heard from him or got a card or a call or anything like that. And so not to mention you get to hang out with them. But at the same time, you know, it's good for business. You know, it's a good practice to, you know, to get referrals and have them reconnect. I mean, you know, the more quality of a relationship you have with the folks you're serving, the more you're top of mind, and they are going to feel comfortable to refer those that they know that are in need of your same services.
Right, right. And they'll offer to do annual reviews, and when folks come in for an annual review, and they'll go over, you know, did you have any changes this year, you know, and look at what all their needs are. One of the questions eventually that they'll get to is, do you have a will? Do you have a power of attorney? Do you have a living will and stuff like that? And if they say no, well, then they'll hand them my business card, and that's, you know, one other way that, you know, that helps me out. And whenever I'm talking to folks, if they've depending on their situation, maybe they're looking for auto insurance. I'm more than happy to refer them to my friends. You know, because it's often they're going to be the most affordable place for them. Plus, you're going to feel good about doing business with them.
Right, absolutely. And so that's a good point to start talking a little bit about estate planning. You know, we've really focused a lot on family law on this podcast, but, you know, haven't really talked about the estate planning leads, which is something that, you know, we released, a while ago, but, you know, and we're still ramping up. But can you talk about the estate planning leads and if there's anything that you do differently at all as far as calling them or fielding them or on the initial consultation or meeting with them relative to family law leads and just overall how that's been going? Because I know you did also just expand your regions for estate planning, and from what I've heard, it's been going pretty good.
Yeah, it's I've been in business now 3 years. I went to law school in San Antonio, but my wife and I, we moved back here to Tennessee 3 years ago. This was home for us. And it's one of those things that when you, you know, when you go to law school in one state and then you move, you know, back home when you haven't been there in 10 years, it's kind of hard to get on with a law firm. If you didn't go to school there or you didn't even go in the same state and you don't really have any connections. And so as a result, I'm a solo practitioner. And, you know, when I started out, you know, on my own, trying to find a way to generate business, you know, I went to the local bar association and they've got a referral program that, you know, helped me somewhat. But, you know, at this point, just comparing, you know, the local bar's referral program to what you guys do, your guys is way better. And I don't even participate in the local bar's referral program anymore. You know, I had signed up for basically whatever I could sign up for, which meant I was spreading myself way too thin in areas that I, you know, but I don't think I was the best equipped to handle some of those things. And so now I've cut back to where I'm just doing estate planning, probate, and family law. And, you know, to me, estate planning and probate, those are things that I thought I learned pretty well when I was, you know, working as a law clerk in San Antonio. There's some things that tie in with what I learned, you know, 15 years ago with Edward Jones. And again, it's just, you know, just talking to people. You know, if somebody signs up or, you know, goes through the website with unbundled attorney and they are reaching out asking about a will or a trust or whatever, that's a pretty easy call. You know, they're interested. They want that, or at least they want to talk about it and see what's going to be the best fit for their needs. And, you know, I'll bring them in and, you know, kind of ask, you know, several questions, try to see where they're at, you know, look at what they want to do and ask them what their goals are. You know, if their goal is to, you know, just get a will and leave some things for their family, then wonderful. If they've got a goal of wanting to avoid probate, you know, whatever way possible for their family, then, you know, that sounds like a trust, maybe more along the lines of what they're looking for. And so there was a unique call that, or a unique lead that came through from you guys a few months ago. And it was a lady who wanted to set up a trust for some animals that she had, ones that she had inherited from her sister. And she had basically gone from having one cat herself to now up to like 15 cats from her sister. And she had called around to several attorneys in the area, and she said nobody would touch that. Nobody felt like they knew or felt comfortable doing something like that. And it wasn't something I had done before either, but, you know, knowing how trusts work, you know, once you sit down with somebody and understand what it is they want to do, you can find a way to get them there. And, you know, she was a really nice lady. We had, you know, just sat down, found a good way to relate to her. I, you know, even on the initial call when I was talking with her, I told her, hey, I'm happy to meet with you. You know, but jokingly said, just don't bring any of your cats with you because I'm allergic to cats, which I am. You know, she laughed, and you know, it was all cool. She came in; she's a really nice lady, and we got everything set up for her just the way that she wanted. And I think she, you know, she left feeling really, you know, really good, really positive about everything going forward. And so, you know, those are the clients that I love to find. You know, the ones that, number one, I don't have to go to court for. you know, for me, my wife and I have a 3-year-old, and there are a lot of days I'm working from home because I'm with him. So yeah, if I can avoid court, I'm happy. But aside from that, just ones that are, you know, that you can sit down, have, you know, relate to, build a connection with, and just feel good that you're helping somebody accomplish the goals that they want to accomplish. That's a good day for me.
Yeah, you know, and it might be hard to quantify this on, you know, it might be something you just kind of do naturally because you've got, you know, this all this training from your background and, you know, these great mentors you've worked with, and obviously the training from Edward Jones. But, you know, we talk about relating to clients. Can you, I, you know, is there any way you can isolate some of the things that you do that makes people feel comfortable? And obviously you've got humor in there. You're just trying to, you know, think about the relationship. Do you think in your mind about that person? Do you picture him when you're talking on the phone, or are there, do you tell stories? I mean, how do you, what,
Can you isolate that at all?
It's hard. I mean, to me, I think a lot of it just comes from probably just from personality, but a lot just also just from work experience. I mean, the 8 years I spent in between undergrad and college, most of that time I spent working in politics and government and then in marketing communications. So I spent 4 years working for the Missouri Lieutenant Governor as an assistant communications director and on his statewide campaign in 2004. And when you're going around county to county trying to, you know, put up signs or you know, network with folks to try to build some support, or talking with constituents on a daily basis, those were things I did, you know, for 4 years. You know, you can't come away from that experience not finding, you know, ways to, you know, to relate to folks. I think, you know, your body language says a lot. You know, just showing genuine interest in what somebody has to say certainly means a lot. You know, a lot of times you hear, you know, attorneys get bad raps for all sorts of things, that they're, you know, they lie, that they're scumbags, that they, you know, they don't return phone calls or whatever the case might be. And certainly some of that is warranted, at least by some of our brothers and sisters in the practice. But, you know, if you just present yourself as a real person, and just trying to help them reach the goals that they're trying to reach, you know, I think sometimes you may even, you know, wind up as a client being a friend, and sometimes that happens too.
Yeah, you know, it makes me think about the interview we had with Michelle Bernard. I believe the title of the podcast is Bringing a Holistic Approach to the Practice of Law. And, you know, she just said, you know, I love my clients. I love what I do. She talks about how, you know, if someone submits something in the middle of the night, you know, she tries to text them first thing in the morning and let them know, hey, you know, I'm here. She's thinking about them. She's empathizing with what they're dealing with. And that informs everything that she does. And I think people feel so good just knowing that she cares and she genuinely, you know, understands, or at least tries to understand and appreciate what they're going through. And, you know, and they feel really comforted by that. And it can be, and that's why I think it's so shocking sometimes when, you know, the leads get a call, is that there is this stigma that attorneys are, you know, out for themselves and so forth. And, you know, there's examples of that. But when you share the opposite with that, it shocks them to the point where they feel like, wow, you know, this is completely different than not only what I would expect to be a normal human being to relate to me, but also a lawyer to relate to me in this way.
Yeah. And I've had folks that come in for a consultation and, you know, they're really nervous. Now there can be a number of reasons why they might be nervous, but a lot of times it's just, you know, who's comfortable sitting down with an attorney? If you've got to meet with an attorney, a lot of times it's for bad reasons, you know. Number one, estate planning isn't quite the same way. But you know, there have been times I've said, dude, you know, and that's another thing. If you can use being in the South, being in Tennessee, if you use the word folks, you know, that's one way to relate to folks. Yeah, sometimes, you know, just using the term dude, I mean, it calms things down, helps people see that, hey, you know, we don't have to be, you're not, you know, meeting with some stuffy attorney that's, you know, up on the, you know, the 20th floor of some big office building downtown. I've got my office out in West Knoxville, which is more the, you know, where that part of town where a lot of folks live. It's a nice place. And, you know, smiling and being friendly and cordial goes a long way, even in the legal practice.
Yeah, and again, you know, I guess I've been doing a lot of these podcast interviews, but it reminds me of the conversation I had with Sue Bunlutai. The episode was the turnaround episode, how one change in approach can transform your results. But she talked about how she shifted into, you know, originally was like, how can I get this person to enroll? And then it shifted to her, like, to realize, like, there's a lot of control here that people have to give up. You know, for you know, it's their kids or it's their future and their everything they you know, in estate planning, everything they've built for their entire lives, they're giving up control to someone else that they've never met, you know, in many cases, or, you know, sometimes you're referred, but in the case of the leads, a lot of times they've never met you, they don't know who you are, and they have to give up that control on something that's so important to them, which is their rights to their kids or all the assets they've earned for their whole life. And recognizing that and understanding that really can also change the whole dynamic and the way in which you relate to someone that, you know, like you said, is going to be nervous. Is going to be nervous meeting with a lawyer for something that they can't do themselves, and they need you to help them.
Yeah. And, you know, there was a fellow that I was talking to last week. I don't remember how he found me. I think it was through one of these sites where it's an attorney site where you set up a profile. This lead wasn't particularly from you guys, but it's still exactly what we're talking about. That he left me a message. I called him back. I talked to him a little bit. You know, I explained that, you know, my schedule is maybe a little more flexible. You know, I can meet with you in the evenings. Occasionally on weekends, I'll still do some of that. And basically he told me, well, I've got an appointment already scheduled with another attorney, but it was like a county away. And he said, I don't really want to go down there. And the way that you're talking to me on the phone, I feel really comfortable with you. So what did he do? He canceled the other appointment with that attorney and came and saw me. We worked through all the issues, figured out what he needs to do. He signed a contract, and I came in to my office today, and he had dropped off, you know, half of the retainer in cash for me. So, you know, that's somebody that, you know, whatever it was I did, I'm not exactly sure, but I related to him in the right way, where he was comfortable, you know, enough with me on the phone to come in and still built on that rapport in person. And, you know, and now we're ready to get rolling on his case.
Yeah. Yeah, gosh, you know, what really comes up for me when you share that is, you know, we have so many lawyers that have so much success with these campaigns, but there's a few here and there that just, you know, they take a few leads and they'll just go, yeah, and these leads are, they just have a bad attitude towards it, just like you'd have the bad attitude if you looked at, you know, a certain house and so forth. And, you know, it's really important to realize that these are people, there are unique circumstances, and to try to just communicate and relate. And I think that's really the common thread. I mean, yeah, we can get into some of the practical options you're offering and being able to do unbundled and lower price points and work with people's budget. I mean, that's a big part of it too, no doubt. I mean, and we've got some great, you know, interviews so far talking about the ways in which you can craft these creative options to do that. But, you know, above everything else, it's a relationship. It's how can you make people feel comfortable, empathize with what they're going through, and understand, you know, how you can make them feel comfortable that you're going to be the one to shepherd them through that. And that, to me, you know, from the lawyers that do, you know, outstanding, you know, with these leads, that seems to be one of the most commonalities among all of them, is that they really are great at empathizing, understanding their client, and communicating
sure.
that.
Sure. And for me, I mean, I went looking back in preparation for this, and I must have signed up with Unbundled Attorney back in May. So I've been working with you guys for about 6 months, and it was probably a combination of things. You know, getting away from the local bar association's referral program, going instead with you guys. And the partnerships with, you know, my insurance agency and my financial strategist, and doing things together there. If you do good work, you know, it'll happen sooner or later. All those things put together. But I think working with Unbundled Attorney is another big piece of it, that by September, I finally got into a full-time office. Before that, I had been primarily working from home. And when I would set an appointment with somebody, most often I was meeting with them at a Panera Bread, you know, which, you know, it works, but it's just not ideal. And to be able to, you know, to get to the point where I could get into an office, establish a more professional environment, which is what I wanted to do. You know, you guys were certainly helpful in helping me build my business up to where I could make that jump into a full-time office. Again, I'm still not here 40 hours a week. There are still some days I'm working from home. But what I know now, whenever I'm scheduling an appointment with somebody, I've got a convenient place to meet with them, whether it's, you know, in my office or a conference room. And, you know, that makes a big difference to people too.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You know, I'm so glad you talked about that, because you know that transition from, you know, basically being a mobile lawyer to having a full-time office. It's usually almost the opposite, where, you know, most lawyers are working from the office, and then they've been learning, you know, now that there's cell phones and they can do things, you know, from their house and so forth with the internet, to transition to the mobile. You go in the other direction here, and now you have a full-time office and so forth because of the volume of clients that are coming in and amount of folks that have been retaining you. Can you talk about, you know, just your experience working from home and, you know, sure, some of the things that you've done to make that work? And, you know, one of the things being, you know, meeting with people at these locations, but also just, you know, dealing with things electronically and, you know, maybe working with people. I don't know if you do Skype or video, and then also how that's shifted for you, you know, now that you're working in the office as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a learning process, you know, for the last 3 years, and there are some things that I looked into at least enough to satisfy myself to begin with, and I feel like some decisions I made did work out pretty well. Other things, you know, I'll change as I go. But again, for us, I got sworn in as a Tennessee attorney. I think it was a week after our son was born. And my wife has a full-time job. Her job, you know, has our health insurance on it. And frankly, she was making, you know, her salary was paying our bills, and it wasn't me. And so we were kind of in a spot where, okay, I haven't gotten a job with a local firm. So I've got the flexibility, you know, if you've got a law degree, you can practice law if you know what you're doing. And you can do it from anywhere. And dude, I can do it from home, watching my little boy. It was a little bit easier, I would say, when he was an infant than now when he's 3 years old. But it's something where my wife, she's had a lot of flexibility with her schedule. She'll go in way early, way earlier than I'd even want to get up, and get off at like 3:30, 3 or 3:30, which gives me, you know, more time in the afternoon and the evenings to do some things. But what I did was, you know, a lot of times you need fax, at least for service, you know, for serving other attorneys, for the, you know, that's an easy way to meet the service requirement, is having a fax. Well, we don't even have a landline at our house. You know, nowadays, you know, it seems like half the people don't have landlines. They've got cell phones only. So I signed up with an e-fax service. Ring Central is what I use. It's basically $100 a year, and I've got a fax line. And any faxes I get, they go right into my email. It's really easy for me to send faxes however I need, and I can do that from anywhere. So that knocks out that for me. There have been a few times that I had folks come by my house for a consultation. That wasn't ideal. I tried to prevent doing that whenever possible. But, you know, if that's what worked, then that's what worked. There's been even a few times I made house calls. And I can't remember ever hearing of attorneys really making house calls unless it's, you know, a personal friend. But, you know, if it's one little detail that makes somebody feel that much more comfortable with you, then hey, I'm happy to do that. Like I said, now making the transition into a full-time office, that certainly makes me feel easier. I don't have to, you know, try to pick a place that's convenient for me and the potential client. Or try to figure out where they live or you know, give them directions to my house or whatever. I can just tell them, you know, here's my office. It's right off the interstate over here, and then they can find me easily enough. But yeah, there were times, you know, 2 years ago where occasionally I had my little boy with me in his car seat. He might have been 8 months or whatever, but he went with me to a few consultations and a few will executions. And especially when he was younger, he was content to just sit in his car seat and observe, and he was quiet, and it was awesome. But now that he's 3 years old, that's not happening. So it's just something that as I've worked and as I've built my practice and as I've, you know, been able to actually, you know, keep some dollars in my business account now, I've got the flexibility to do some things and to build up to where I've got, you know, a convenient way to run my practice. I still got a lot of growing to do. My boy's in a preschool that's one day a week now. And so I can't help but think, you know, when he finally gets into kindergarten and I can, you know, be in my office, you know, 5 days a week, how much more time I'm going to have and be able to do things a lot better as opposed to, you know, trying to work on stuff at midnight like I'm still doing now.
Yeah. Well, you want to talk about being relatable to clients when you sit down there with an 8-month-old and you're dealing with family law and they're dealing with custody. You're like, hey, man, I get it. All right. Here's mine. You know, like,
exactly.
I don't know what the heck I would do if I didn't have time with him, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, there are clients that, you know, maybe they saw my son once. And now here it is, you know, 6 or 8 months later. And, you know, they still remember seeing him. And I don't know how many other attorneys will get their clients, you know, sending them friend requests on Facebook. And then even if they do, how many of them will accept those? I don't know. But I get, you know, a fair number of clients who will do that. And, you know, when you're working with them on an ongoing basis, you know, they'll say, oh, hey, those were some great pictures, you know, that you had up of your son doing X, Y, and Z. And I think it just gets back to that building the relationship and you know, they look at you more as a real person and as a friend as opposed to just, you know, somebody that you've got to pay in order to get your legal matter dealt with.
Yeah, there was one other attorney we had on the show. Her name is Marcia Stiles. I think the episode is how to expand your practice statewide, serve more clients, cultivate referrals. That's right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she talked about the in-home appointments she would do. And, you know, as a female lawyer, there was a couple of things where she might have to come have someone come with her in a couple, you know, odd situations. But for the most part, it was always, you know, where if someone had trouble coming to the office, she would go to them and she wasn't even charging it. And people just, gosh, they just really appreciated it.
Sure.
You know, having a lawyer that would just come to them when they didn't have a car. I mean, it's just, and she had a lot of other things that she did that were just, you know, unusual, but, you know, really just, you know, she gets so many referrals because of it, because people just really appreciate, you know, how she's willing to just, you know, to help people out and do it the way that, you know, they need it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I remember when I was in college and got a speeding ticket, there was an attorney that, you know, that ran an ad in the school paper all the time about tickets. So I called him and he worked from home. He had a nice home and he had a home office that was right off the front door. I mean, so his setup was perfect if you're going to run, you know, a law office from home. My home's not set up that way. And it would be nice if it were, but it's not. And so, you know, for me, my office inside my home is as far from the front door as possible, and you've got to go all the way through the house to get there, and it's just not ideal. So, on the times that I have had folks come over, you know, we'll just use a kitchen table, and there, you know, that's kind of down home folksy type way to do it too. But still, regardless of the location, you know, certain locations are going to set a better tone and give a certain impression. But regardless of where I am, I feel like I can still, you know, talk to folks, see what their need is, address what that is, and help them craft a plan of action in order to get their goals met.
Yeah, and as fun as it is to have people come to your own home, you know, it's certainly just as welcome to have them come to your office as opposed to that. And you know, there's a certain amount of credibility as well with, you know, Tara talked about that, is just having to come into your office. You've got an office, you've got books on the wall, you know, law books, you got, you know, people just, you know, that makes you, okay, I'm in a lawyer's office now. Like there's a certain amount of professional clout in having a law office you can work from, and there's a certain degree of confidence and credibility that communicates. So, so one thing I want to just briefly shine a light on, you know, before we wrap up today, because I think it's really relevant, is again, just talk a little bit about estate planning. You'd mentioned, you know, there were some things that you would learn with Edward Jones. Obviously that's an investment position you had where you're looking forward to the future. You talked about how you asked people what their goals are. Was there anything else that you learned specifically from that training with Edward Jones that you apply in your practice doing the estate planning leads and just by planning in general that you could share?
It's not really something that, you know, helps you learn how, you know, how or what to include in a will or things like that. It's more just in that overall consultation. and understanding, hey, do you guys have life insurance? If so, who are your, do you know who your beneficiaries are? You know, you may have filled out that policy, that application, you know, 35 years ago. Has anything changed? And just understanding, you know, whether it's that or your 401k, your IRAs, your, you know, whatever other investments or assets that they have in their within their portfolio, understanding what some of those are, how they work, it's helpful. But you know, if they bring in copies of that kind of stuff. And double checking who the beneficiaries are. You know, you can explain to them, but look, you've designated your beneficiaries on this and this and this, and that means we don't have to include that stuff in your will. And some people don't understand that. They don't get the concept of non-probate assets versus probate assets until you explain it to them. And like I said, there's been some times when I've had my friend who's a financial strategist sit in on a consultation. And there you've got two professionals with different licenses, with different, different areas that they work in, but they're related. And he understands, you know, a lot about wills and trusts, even though he's not an attorney. I understand a lot about, you know, some of the retirement things that he's talking about, even though I'm not licensed to do that anymore. But it helps for someone to see, you know, the total package, to see, you know, as they progress through life, they're making plans for retirement. But you're meeting with an attorney for, you know, for estate planning purposes, for the times when you pass away and you want to make sure that those things go the way you want them to go, or even before you pass away, if you become incapacitated or you can't make certain decisions for yourself, what's going to happen in the interim there? And so I would just, you know, encourage other attorneys out there, if you're not already, you know, working with, you know, with a financial planner and swapping referrals and things like that, it's certainly a good way to help build a practice and a great way to help, you know, to help your clients out. You know, there's one client that I introduced to my financial strategist friend just 2 weeks ago when I had sat down with him talking about one thing. He had asked about, it was not an estate planning issue, but he asked about wills. I'm like, yeah, I do that. That's the number one thing I do. And we talked about that. And then he also asked, hey, do you know anybody who, you know, who does retirement planning? I'm like, you bet. I've got a great guy who does that. It's another way to, you know, continue building rapport with your clients. And if you can pair your clients up with a good professional who's going to, you know, help them conserve the money that they've got instead of, you know, losing 40% of it, like sometimes happens in a bad market, you know, your clients are really going to love you.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, gosh, Bill, this has been just really fun. I feel like we could keep going for hours here, but I just wanted to thank you so much for sharing it. I think we've really, you know, we can talk tactics and tips and options and all that kind of stuff all to the end of time, but I think we've really, you know, touched on something that, you know, overarches all of that, and that's just building that relationship with the client, being a real person, thinking about what they need, you know, and, you know, these are, like you said, you know, it's tough to quantify these things, but you know, I think you've done a wonderful job at it. You know, because it comes with experience, it comes with training and so forth. You know, being a good relating and communicator. You know, Richard Shannon talked about being an empathetic listener was one of the things that he talked about in the last episode. But you know, this is what it's all about. You know, you're in a service based industry helping people. And, you know, people are people. They've got the same challenges, similar conflicts, and they want to know that you care about what it is that they're trying to accomplish. And being able to convey that effectively is a really key part of, you know, certainly having a successful practice. So I just really appreciate what you're doing, the way you relate to your clients, and thank you for taking the time to really share these principles.
Oh, well, thank you. And I'll be the first to say when Graham first mentioned, you know, hey, you might be a good person for the podcast. I thought, I was thinking, what, are you serious? There's so much, you know, room that I have to grow in all these different areas, you know, with my practice. But yeah, you know, it's one of those things that I think what you do well, if you can excel in, you know, in one or two things, that can help cover, you know, other inadequacies in a number of ways. And maybe that's where I'm at. I mean, I was flattered that, you know, to have the invitation extended to me to participate in this. You know, the other attorneys that I've heard on the podcast have been, you know, in my opinion, you know, far more knowledgeable and successful than I am. But you know, it's a great opportunity. I'm happy to work with people, and if we can, you know, if we can get my folks where they're trying to be at the end of the day, then I'm happy.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I got to say, success is measured in a lot of different ways. And gosh, throughout this interview, I was, you know, taking notes going, man, we got to cover that. Man, we got to cover that. And probably more, you know, as much or more than any interview I've had. And there's a few things I'm looking back to. I mean, you talked about, you know, doors versus people versus demos and understanding the numbers, a law of averages. And, you know, there's so many other things we could have covered too here. But, you know, it was great. It was a great conversation. There's so much to learn. I'm sure we have plenty of room for a round two some other time as well. And I'm really looking forward to your growth now that you have the office and you're expanding your estate planning practice, and we're going to be bringing you more clients there. And you know, I'm sure from a traditional success standpoint, you know, financial and so forth, you know, that'll be coming really soon as well. And I thank you again and appreciate you for taking the time today to join us. It was a really great call.
All right, I appreciate it. Thank you, Dave.
Yep. And so to everyone else who's listening, you know, thank you for participating in this podcast. We certainly appreciate or hope you're learning a lot. We'd love to hear your feedback. You can leave us a review on iTunes, of course, and, you know, reach out to us if you'd be interested in being interviewed for the podcast. You can send us an email to podcast@unbundledattorney.com. And with that, we'll go ahead and wrap up. We'll see you all in the next episode. Thanks so much. For more information about how our lead generation services can help you grow your practice, visit our website at www.unbundledattorney.com. And if you're enjoying this podcast, please be sure to subscribe so you get each new episode as soon as it's available, and leave us a rating and review on iTunes. Once again, thanks for listening.